What we don't want is we don't want people who are broke because they agreed to college debt. They got smarter but broker at the same time. That's not how it's supposed to happen. And the system is all screwy. How can we fix it? We'll tell you next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So I want to relay a tweet, right? Paul sent me a message at Deacon Punnett, P-U-N-N-E-T-T, at Deacon Punnett. It's always, by the way, it's always fun to keep in touch through Twitter. But Paul writes, he said, listening and wondering to what extent college loans crushing former students actually offsets the national debt, which is crushing the United States. Alan?
Well, that's a good question. Up until 2010, the private lending companies were making the interest on the loans. Since 2010, the taxpayer has been, I should say, it's not really, well, it is the taxpayer, but it's really the Department of Education and its crony contractors. Department of Education has been profiting $50, $60, $70 billion a year, every year. Now,
is that money used to pay off the national? It doesn't go back to pay the national debt.
It doesn't go back to the Treasury. It remains, by and large, within the Department of Education, who dole it out to their crony contractors and so on and so forth. You know, the sign of prestige in Washington in higher education apparently isn't, you know, how many people did you help go to college. It's how big is your budget. And so the Department of Education holds the reins on this lending system very tightly. But, you know, I mean, think about that for a minute. Why is the government profiting even a dime on student loans? You know, Donald Trump said exactly those words just before he ran for president. And I might also harken back to, you know, 1965, when the Higher Education Act was rolled out and President Johnson made a speech at the signing ceremony. And he declared in that speech, and I urge your listeners to Google it, he declared that the loans would be free of interest. And today, $100 billion a year in interest alone clicks off on the student loan portfolio and the, you know, 55 million borrowers and cosigners that are living under them. And so, you know, I don't think it's a very wise thing to look to our, by definition, economically disadvantaged citizens who go to college to solve our nation's debt problem. You know, I think that's just perverted in every sense of the word.
That's really, so as my grandmother would have said, that's robbing Peter to pay Paul. So you're not getting ahead, because what you're doing then, you're making it harder for those people to make money and be the future successes that they could be, because we've saddled them with all the debt they had in order to get in the game. So, all right. So, and I think it's a fair point. And I know that there may not be like a one size fits all solution for everybody, but what are you proposing? What is student loan justice proposing as the way to get out of this mess, to be consistent with the Constitution, and to no longer have college debt a national threat?
Well, you know, for the first 15 years of our existence, we fought very moderately and very rationally for the return of bankruptcy protections to the loans. You know, that is the obvious and blatant injustice. And really, that is the most obvious way to fix the problem. When you put bankruptcy protections back on the table, as they are there for every other borrower for every other type of loan in this country,
right,
you immediately light a fire under the lending system. And the Department of Education would say, okay, maybe we shouldn't be lending, you know, $57,000 per undergrad for, you know, nonsense degrees in underwater basket weaving. And, oh, by the way, maybe we should shut down some of these horrible colleges that have been exploiting the system only for the sake of their own financial gain rather than the benefit of the students. You know, a lot of very good faith things are compelled to happen when you return bankruptcy protections to a lending instrument. But, Ian, I have to tell you now, here we are in this current crisis. We're tipping up on $2 trillion in indebtedness, And we now find ourselves in a financial crisis, the likes of which maybe even will be worse than what we saw in 2008 and 2009. I have to say that it's a failed lending system. And at this point, returning bankruptcy protections may only succeed in forcing 10, 15, 20 million people into bankruptcy. So at the end of the day, they get a lot much of their debt
off the books, or protected.
Offloaded, maybe not all, right. And when you go to bankruptcy court, if you're making a decent living, a judge probably won't allow you to discharge 100% of your loan.
Right.
You may have to
structure it in a way that you can handle paying it back.
Well, that's right. According to the wisdom of the bankruptcy judge.
Right.
So at this point, if we were to do that, shunting 10, 15, 20 million people into bankruptcy, well, number one, in the current crisis, that certainly really isn't going to stimulate the economy very much. But number two, do you really want to force 20 million of your citizens whose only crime is going to college into bankruptcy?
Yeah.
Do you really want those citizens to be, financially, well, at least they're not in debt, but they're, flat broke, and they're certainly not thrilled about the whole predicament. And most of them, many certainly, are, seemingly resentful that they were put through all of this just for the president of filing for bankruptcy.
Right.
So, that doesn't really make sense to me. In an average year in the United States, a little bit less than 1 million people file for bankruptcy. So do we really want to overwhelm the courts in that way?
Right.
Why do that when clearly, given that we're throwing, $5 trillion out already to stimulate the economy, why wouldn't we not look at simply canceling these loans? I mean, if we want to stimulate the economy and we want to make sure the money gets to people who need it the most,
fastest,
this would be the obvious place to look.
All right. So before we go further down that road, which I think is going to dominate the conversation here for a bit, I want to go back to something you said, because I don't know that, just in case you needed a little updating on the file. If there ever was a bigger contrast to the way these many for-profit schools work, where they pop up, they get as much debt as they can loaded on your back, then they go out, or they just merely turn it over to the government. They got their money, and so you've got credit hours you can't transfer to another school. It's generally crappy. Because what happened a couple of years ago, just to remember this, is that the accreditation systems in schools switched their focus and became very job ready. And so you can't have people might argue this, but at any major university, for example, like mine, Kansas State University, there are no underwater basket weaving degrees anymore. If there was at some point, I don't know, but there was these sort of bogus majors that were kind of floating around there for a while. Every single thing we do has to be focused on whether or not it will make that student job ready. So it became much more vocational from when I, or perhaps you, went to school, which was just all about mind expansion. It was, you go to school because you're going to go learn and you're going to read books and you're going to be challenged in intellectual ways. There was nothing vocational about my English literature degree. Nothing. And I kind of liked it that way. But now even that doesn't exist. And everything is focused on how are you going to make a living the day you take off the cap and gown. And I think that's something to keep in mind, because the pressure for that comes from these accreditation systems. And they come in and they look at you and go, these courses won't help students get jobs. And so they're really hard on schools to make sure the equipment is updated, that the syllabus is focused on current job standards, not job standards from 10 years ago. So I'm just making that point just so the people can hear it. It really is true. But even that isn't enough to keep up with how much debt students are taking on and how hard it will be to pay it back. There's my little rant. What do you think of that?
Right. Well, and I can tell you that if the threat of bankruptcy was back on the table and the Department of Education saw it there, it would crack the whip on the schools. I really think that it would probably just toss I'm going to say many, if not most, of the for-profit colleges out of the lending system. And quite frankly, I think it may throw a couple of the nonprofits out as well. But, you know, these are the things that have to happen in order to have an efficient, you know, quality, you know, a higher educational system that is geared towards success. And so, you know,
I think that's important for people to know that I think it's I'm impressed by that, truthfully. I went into getting my PhD, and I was almost a little put off by how vocational the focus was from the very beginning. And I thought, wow, that's not how I remember school the first time around at all.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the colleges are really starting to have to take a really hard look at what they're teaching these days.
And they have for years. They really have.
And, you know, particularly given the prices that they are charging, I'm sorry, but it's just unconscionable. And, you know, that's another thing that would happen with, you know, reasonable lending limits put on the lending system. The colleges simply wouldn't be able to charge the prices that they're charging today.
What do you think is too high? I'm curious about that. And I think that's a completely fair question. But what do you think is too high?
Well, you know, I go back to, say, the 70s when, and granted, the colleges were funded to a much greater extent by the government back then directly.
Yep.
But whatever the end consumer price was then, adjusted for inflation till today, I think that's pretty reasonable. You know, okay. My parents and my aunts and uncles and so forth who went to college, they didn't seem to sweat it. You know, I would think that without any debt, one should be able to pay for 4 years of college with maybe a year's salary or so, a starting salary, something along those lines, maybe a little bit less. We've gone way beyond that now. I mean, we're up in the clouds now.
Well, and back to that example about the my son's girlfriend that took on all this college debt in order to become a lawyer. There's such a glut of lawyers out there that in that first year, where maybe there was a time when in the first year of you know, joining a firm, a first year lawyer might be able to think about paying down their college debt, but not anymore, because those prices have been driven down to where they might be making $75,000, $80,000, which is great, but it's not the imaginary lawyer money that other people think about, right? Where they're not like, that's where they think, well, these lawyers are making $200,000, $300,000 a year. No, they're not. And they're not being able to, they're not making enough to pay back just on that exact scale that you mentioned.
Yeah, they absolutely are not. I think, I don't know what the percentages are. Maybe you would know better than I would, but the number of lawyers that I know who are actually practicing law today, right. It's a huge minority. It's probably less than 25 or 30% are actually practicing law. A lot of them have gone on to do other things. Some of them are, I know a lot of reporters, for example, and most of them have law degrees. And
yeah,
so, you know, you're not going to get that big five law firm job unless you're like top of your class and you go to the top one or two tiers of law schools. If you're down to tier three, you know, forget about it. You're just not going to make any kind of money that you thought you were going to be making. And you know, I have to say that's true across the board for many degrees. It's not just law school that's killing people. It's business masters.
Right.
And on down the line, you know, the numbers are just outrageous.
I want to read you a tweet. This is from Paul. He says, part of this problem is the abuse of the H-class immigration system. He says the H-1 visa amounts to indentured servitude for the immigrant worker, he or she, at the mercy of the employer, and the native graduate an indentured servant to the lending system, which is an interesting perspective that I wouldn't have thought of either. But, well, let's go back to what you had said, and I'm so sorry that I put that on pause, but I thought it was an important point to make. So now if we actually, because of what you're saying, that at one point it would have been a big fix just to allow regular bankruptcy protections to exist for student loans. Now we're taking that off the table and saying, under the current conditions, let's wipe out all college debt, period. Let's just say with one swipe of the pen, nobody owes the federal government anything for anything they've had to spend in order to get their college education. How would that fix the problem?
Well, you know, first of all, right now, nobody is paying on their federal loans. And right. we know for a fact, at least as trustworthy as the former COO of the lending system is, we can say with confidence that 80% of the people were losing sleep over their loans prior to this crisis.
Right.
So when this crisis abates, really, if even 10 or 15% of the people who should be paying actually happily resume making their payments, I would be maybe a bit surprised. I think it will be at most that. I think 85% of the people are going to be like, you know what, this economy sucks. I've got to survive. I've got to feed and clothe myself. Forget about student loans. And I just think that that's the reality. So whether the government does nothing or does something is quite important, because this could have a very bad outcome. The bad outcome would be the government remains very stubborn, you know, starts filing civil lawsuits against broke people across
right.
the country.
Right.
And, you know, as of 5 years ago, we saw literally federal marshals rolling up on the homes of defaulted borrowers, at least in Texas, and hauling them out of their homes under arrest. Yeah. And, you know, I know that sounds crazy, but it's true. And I would urge everybody to Google
yeah.
that. Federal marshals, like literally a SWAT team, went after some guy in Texas with like a $1,500 original loan. And they arrested him. They wouldn't let him go until he agreed to a repayment plan of like $7,500. And they had plans to arrest 1,500 additional people for exactly the same thing. And so that's a dystopian outcome that I don't think would serve the country very well.
No.
And would probably lead to some very terrible civil strife if you scaled that up.
That's debtor's prison all over again. That's the debtor's
right.
prison system, which was found to be unconstitutional.
You know, that's right. But, you know, they're finding a way, and it's not just student loans, by the way. They're finding ways to arrest people for debt on an increasingly frequent basis. You know, they will send a summons to the wrong address. The person never sees it, never knows that there's any kind of a hearing, doesn't show up. All of a sudden, that becomes a failure to appear and a warrant
right.
for arrest. And so these are the sort of tricks that are being played on the American people. And if we allow that to blossom and flourish under this current crisis, I don't see a very good ending to that, no matter how you slice it or dice it.
Right.
What would be far more rational is to simply recognize that this is a failed and broken lending system and push the reset button.
Yeah.
You know, this is something that conservatives really should get behind. You know, Grover Norquist himself said government should be small enough so that if you had to, you could take it to the bathroom and drown it in the tub. Well, I'm here to tell you that I think that is precisely where we are at with this federal loan system. Whatever comes after this, I don't know. Quite frankly, I don't know that the government should really even be in the lending business based on what we have seen over the past 20, 30 years as the corruptions have really overtaken and captured the Department of Education. But I do know that this lending system is toast. And I really, of the $1.5 trillion in outstanding federal loans, I would be stunned if they got back even, I don't know, $200 billion of that money.
All right.
You can write it off in a good way or in a bad way.
No, I think writing it off would be really interesting, because it would also do something else. It would create a new market for people going to school. If suddenly, for example, people who are carrying enormous undergrad debt, but they're not able to find a job, they could at least contemplate, if they're not having to pay off huge undergrad debt, they, nutty as this might seem, is that they go back and get a master's degree at a time when that would get them ready for the next wave of the economy. What this reminds me of, too, is what happened after World War II. This is kind of the GI Bill idea, where soldiers who went and fought got a college education, and these schools benefited from all these people that were going to school. Well, the whole economy benefited from that. That's what we need to do. I think hitting that reset button is a great idea. All right, so student loan justice, that's what we're talking about. Let's give the numbers. Let's get this conversation going early next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. All right, so we gave the numbers out. We hope you joined the conversation. Setting the bar lower, it sounds like something people would resist, right? But if you actually look at what we need, how we benefit as a country, right now, what we need to do is make it easier for more people to either go to school at a time when there are fewer jobs, or make it easier for them to get over the debt that they incurred so that the jobs that are available and are paying as well won't crush them with all of the school debt that they've got to lug around. Did I sum that up right, Alan? Alan Kalinge is with the Student Loan Justice. You can link up to them at coasttocoastam.com. Alan?
Well, you know, I think that's right. If we're talking about stimulating the economy, you know, we've already thrown $5 trillion at Wall Street, at big businesses, and a few small businesses, and I guess a few breadcrumbs went out in stimulus checks to individuals. That's true. But, you know, all of those $5 trillion have got to be paid for. So they added to the national debt. Maybe they'll end up raising taxes down the road to pay for it. But, you know, of the $1.5 trillion in federal student loans outstanding, only maybe $300-400 billion of that is actual principal. The rest is interest, fees, penalties, et cetera. So the president, by executive order, could cancel these loans without needing any congressional appropriation, without needing any congressional approval, and without adding one penny to the national debt. And as I said, without raising a dime in taxes. So
this is because this is money that's already gone out the window. It's already gone.
The taxpayers paid for these loans many, many years ago.
Right.
And the taxpayers have made a king's ransom on these loans over the past decade.
Already.
Steps back already. So the president could cancel these loans by executive order tomorrow. And on balance, the taxpayer would probably be about breaking even, maybe even making maybe a little bit in the black. I don't know. But, you know, as far as the fiscal stimulus tree is concerned, this is like the lowest hanging twig on the
branch. Right. Well put. And I think this is what's and maybe there is no argument to keep it anymore, but it's just out of force of habit that we have it, or the kind of posturing that comes with these old, you know, blue laws, right?
You know, bureaucracy is a very stubborn thing. A lot of inertia behind a multi-trillion-dollar lending program in Washington, D.C. A lot of people are making their careers off of this lending system. So, you know, I will be the first to admit that the people who want to keep this lending system are
powerful.
A lot of them, and they're powerful, et cetera. But I think we've reached the breaking point, and it's just a fact that this is a failed lending system. I mean, put a fork in it. It's done.
Right.
And whether you unwind it in a way that's beneficial for the country or in a way that winds up with, you know, riots in the streets and all kinds of bad civil strife, et cetera, you know, the choice at this point is really ours. But
well,
this lending system is toast.
Here's the problem, of course, and I try to avoid politics, but there's a reason why this isn't getting any real conversation in Washington, and that's because Betsy DeVos is sort of in charge of this whole thing, and she's also a beneficiary. In the long run, her family has been a great beneficiary of this system.
Well, Betsy DeVos has been a disaster. It's true. Her family has been invested in student loan collection companies. There's a lot of bad things that I could say about Betsy DeVos. But, you know, truly, this problem goes way beyond the current president, the current Secretary of Education.
Right.
You know, those people come and go. It's really the unelected bureaucrats, the contractors, the for-profit loan servicers like Sallie Mae and Nelnet and Navient. And quite frankly, it's the rank and file that are running the Department of Education Office of Federal Student Aid who fight like bulldogs behind the scenes to keep this lending system going exactly as it is. I mean, they don't want any changes. They love it.
But,
exactly as it is, no matter what the public cost is.
Yeah, so but really I, so. I don't mean to take, I want to emphasize that point you just made because it's great. I'm not trying to say it started with her. I just think she might be the last person ever to end it. And right? I mean, this problem has been going on for a long time. Republican and Democratic administrations, she would be the person who has benefited the most financially from this broken system, would be the person who might be the least sympathetic ear at this point.
Yeah, you know, when Donald Trump appointed Betsy DeVos to the Secretary of Education, I think the stock in the for-profit college companies went through the roof. And you know, the student loan swamp, as I like to call it, really was given charge of the hen house.
Yeah, let's get rid of that.
If you read her stuff, you can tell that it's just boilerplate written by these unelected bureaucrats and lawyers and lobbyists, etc., that hover in and around and through the Department of Education. But then, you know, on the other hand, it's not up to Betsy DeVos. She serves at the pleasure of the
Right, president. Right, right. I get that. But, I mean, she could and I hope President Trump goes back to his pre-campaign position of being against this system. And I think that would be a good time for him to do it, too, because I think there'd be a lot of people that would feel very differently about his election for something like that. First-time caller line, Chuck is in Florida for Alan Kalinge on Coast to Coast AM. Chuck?
Hey, good morning. How is everybody?
Doing great. Go ahead, jump in.
Yeah, listen, you know, I'm 64 years old. I was about 54 years old, 52 years old when the bottom fell out in 2008.
Right.
And President Obama immediately threw a boondoggle out to the schools by taking over the college loan system. And I was forced into taking these loans if I wanted my unemployment. That's the way it was presented to me.
Really?
And to retrain. Oh, well, I was in construction. And so naturally, the first thing that went to my mind was, hey, I can get that construction management degree I need so that I can improve myself here. This
sure.
would be great. Well, they wouldn't let me do that because naturally, construction was never coming back.
Right.
And so they forced me into a computer degree, and I did 2 years. I got, you know, my CompTIA certification and everything like that. But as you can imagine, when I went into all the Staples and Best Buys in my area to try to get on the Geek Squad with my $20,000 education, I was laughed out the door because of my age. And so here I am now stuck collecting Social Security. That's all I get is my Social Security.
Right.
I was in construction, you know.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that.
$20,000 in debt.
Yep, and I we did talk about that earlier, and I think that's wrong, too. So wouldn't it be great just to get that wiped off right now?
Well, I'll tell you, the next shoe to drop is when they start seizing my Social Security check to pay that loan back. I can't pay it back.
That's what I mean.
$1,000 a month. How am I going to pay this college loan back?
Exactly. So can we just say, yes, you're on board with the idea of wiping out college debt right now?
I think so. I think, you know, President Obama went in there, took over a perfectly good private system so he could give boondoggles to his teachers' unions and everything like that.
Well, I'm not sure it's as simple as that. I'm not sure it's as simple as that. I think there were a lot of people that thought that was a good idea, but we've learned from the very beginning it didn't start with Obama either. So let's not just say the problem started with Obama. It didn't start with Trump. It didn't start with we go back a long ways before this started getting out of hand. So, Alan, what do you say? Another good example, though, of why we just hit the reset button.
First of all, I'd say, Chuck, you're definitely not alone. The fastest group of distressed student loan borrowers, believe it or not, in terms of how much are owed, are senior citizens, are people over the age of 60, I believe, 60 or 64, I'm not sure.
Right.
And that is a trend that New York Times has reported on, many people have reported on, and I can certainly speak to it in our group. We've got seniors who not only went to college at a later age, but also people who took out loans for their kids, or maybe they co-signed for their grandkids.
Right.
And the most sickening part of it is what Chuck just alluded to. You know, for federal loans, they can come after your Social Security now to pay the loans. And by the way, the amount that they garnish, it won't even cover, you know, even part of the interest. The debt will grow and grow and grow. And you really have to ask yourself, come on now, This is the United States of America. Are we really going to treat our seniors that way? You know, frankly, I would say that anybody over the age of 65 who is, you know, dependent on their Social Security for actually living, they should have their loans forgiven, period. No tax penalty, no anything. Yeah. And it's just astonishing to me that we live supposedly in the greatest, most powerful country on earth. And college in Russia is by and large free. College in Mexico is by and large free. College in many of the Western European and even Eastern European nations is free. There are no loans. And so yep. What has gone so wrong in this country?
It wasn't that long ago when college here was virtually free, not free, but it was still at such a reduced cost that, as we point out, it was possible to pay for it by dedicating time and a little bit of money, and you could do it. Now, John is west of the Rockies in Virginia. You're west of the Rockies in Virginia? Is that right, John?
No, I'm east. I'm east. I don't know what happened there.
That's fine. But, okay. And you say...
I've got a couple points to make.
Okay.
One.
Make your best one first.
All right. I'm very leery of any organization that has justice in its name because usually it's pretty leaning far left. But I paid, Mr. Pundit, for my education out of my own pocket. I didn't have a dime in loans.
So did I.
Because I was always raised to not get into debt. So I have to ask you, do I get a refund for all the money I put in because I was responsible?
Nope.
No, first of all, let me say I congratulate you for being able to successfully repay your loans. And the second thing I would say is that while you seem to be taking the moral high ground here and wagging your finger at me for what is clearly a blatant injustice, you know, the Founding Fathers called for bankruptcy protections in the Constitution, not the Bill of Rights, the body of the Constitution itself. So I feel very well justified in using the term justice in my organization's name. Second of all, while you're wagging your finger at me and my members who did nothing more than trust their colleges and sign on the dotted line for lending instruments that they had no idea were devoid of every consumer protection that you can mention, what you're actually achieving, John, is that you are serving to kill the debate and perpetuate this big government lending monstrosity on the citizens. And let me say, a lot of the profits from this lending system are used to fund things like Obamacare, which I suspect you probably don't like. This is the worst big government monstrosity, most big government threat that this country has seen economically, domestically, certainly in my lifetime.
All right,
so
well,
maybe
let me
you take a step back and instead of wagging your finger.
All right. You made your point on that. I understand why he's getting emotional, and I understand, and we sort of anticipated that sense of, do I get a refund? No, but the whole point in here is that we're doing something for the national good at a time when we're in a crisis. So maybe this is when we look aside of our own pocketbook. I mean, I took loans because I could afford to pay them back, and I did. But that's how one of the ways I got by at a time when I had to either extended my 7-year undergrad degree program even longer to pay for it or pick up a couple of loans along the way. Gordon's in Lakeland, Florida on a wild card line. He says this is neither a liberal or a conservative issue. Is that right?
Yeah, thank you so much. I want to remind everyone, I've known Alan for like 15 years. I'm the Florida state leader, and we want everyone to know that there's about half of us are conservatives. Now, Alan, as he stated earlier, I've been reminding you guys, he initially did not call for cancellation, but bankruptcy is the economic Second Amendment, and bankruptcy would prevent excessive amounts of waste of tax dollars. People that cry about this should realize that the threat of cancellation and bankruptcy would save us from bleeding to death, and I nearly bled to death once. Okay, and so I want to remind everyone that the threat of bankruptcy is something that will force lending down and make the spending cuts that President Trump wants necessary. Almost 10% of our national debt is college debt. We will crash the dollar if you and Alan and I don't team up successfully to beat this. And, you know, I want to invite everyone to go to Coast to Coast AM and click the link and come here. And we have a main group and we have state groups. And I'm the Florida state leader. I'm not only well-known on Coast, but I'm a very well-known conservative. I have nearly won the Terry Schiavo case, as you can find. I'm not allowed to get my website out, but everyone knows me anyhow, wink nod.
Okay, well, that's good enough, Gordon. I appreciate that, and I also hear your passion. Wildcard line, Bruce is in South Carolina before we get to the top of the hour on Coast to Coast. Bruce?
Thanks for taking my call. I got a remedy for you on the constructive trust idea, because that's what these are constructive trust. Now, when you sign a contract, you trust the other partner to be liable for their truth, right? Truth in lending.
Right.
Right? Okay.
But now, that's the exception here, right? The truth in lending laws don't apply.
No, it isn't, Ian. It is not the exception. It's the law of the trust.
I know.
It's not a contract. It's a trust.
Okay.
And trust are ruled under equity. Equity has 21 maxims of law. You go by that.
Okay. All right.
Okay. But equity is ruled in chancery court. If you you have a constructive trust, which is a fraud.
Got that.
And you walk into equity court with that fraud, guess what? You lose everything. You have no standing to collect anything on any contract you signed.
Okay.
Or the other party that made that contract that you signed.
All right, well, I think we're on the same side of the conversation, so I'm not sure I can account for the tone. But, Alan, where are you with this?
Well, I'm not sure which way he's going with that. But, you know, he brings up trust. And, you know, taking out a student loan, imagine, say you bought a new car online. You wanted to get the brand new electric car out, the brand new Tesla.
Right.
You buy it online. You go to the dealership. You say, thank you very much. You sign the papers. And you drive off, and you look down, and you come to the first intersection, and you realize that there's no brakes. The car has no brakes. So lo and behold, you rear-end somebody, you crash into a ditch, and you limp back to the dealership, and you say, hey, fellas, I just crashed the car. This car has no brakes.
All right, well, I have a brake. Wait. I have a brake right here. So hang on to that analogy, and we'll find out about your brake versus my brake. Because if I let you continue, I'll crash into a tree, and I don't want to do that. So we'll pick up right there. What happens then when you go back to the dealership and you say, excuse me, no brakes? We'll get to that after the break. Next, on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett.